Today is November 14th, 2018, and this is episode number 488 of the Apple Context Machine. That's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, Editor-in-Chief of TMO.
And I'm John Key, Assistant to the Assistant Regional Manager. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at facebook.com/groups/context machine.
Thank you, John. And I know you're really big. You're super active on the Facebook.
I am not a Facebook party goer of any sort. I'm sorry to say, but I'm sure you guys are having fun there.
Well, so you know, the funny thing is, when Jeff was still with us, he and I bagged on Facebook all the time. I particularly bag on Facebook all the time. But the one thing I really do like Facebook for is the groups. That's like groups are like something that they do better than everybody else. It just sucks that you have to, you know, sell your soul to do it.
Social media, it's kind of a many edged sword, like many powerful tools, right? There are good uses for it and there are not so good uses for it. Because I'm so eloquent in everything I say, and I realize and I realize that anything you say in social media, you might as well etch in
alabaster.
In undestructonium, for the rest of time. I always think, you know what? Probably best to keep that to myself.
Well, having known you for a long time, I see the thought process you're stepping through there. I really, really do.
So here, what good comes from me making this permanent in the, you know,
exactly, in history? Yeah. Exactly. Now, many of our listeners, of course, will recognize John Keat from the video show that we haven't done in a while called Pop Point O.
Yes.
Which, you know, we may or may not, you know.
Yeah, it has to do more with my moving and getting my act together to actually get the video software.
Oh, sweet. We can blame that on you right now?
Oh, yeah, totally. Oh,
okay, great. That works. Let's do that. Now, all right, one more note. Your title is almost identical to the title that Jim Tanis used last week.
You were so mean to Jim.
How was I mean to Jim?
So harsh on Jim. You were like bagging on him. And you know,
what was it? What? When?
Oh,
I love Jim. I respect the crap out of Jim.
I see. Now look at you. You have the same problem with you that everyone has with you, which is.
Yeah, this all checks out.
So let me tell you your problem with you, which is. That when you get grumpy, one, I personally love it, but a lot of people find you intimidating, and they don't realize that you grumpy is just being a cuddly teddy bear, and not everyone appreciates that.
Huh? Yeah, Jeff's known me a long time.
Jeff appreciates that, and he knew how to deal with you like nobody's business.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, for sure.
I'm not sure Jim does. I sensed a little bit of taken aback in Jim, but maybe I was seeing puppies in the clouds that weren't there.
That's interesting. I'll have to ask. I mean, Jim and I have known each other for a long time too.
He's awesome. I love Jim. I love his blog. I love his all his articles that I used to read.
He's such a good technical writer, right?
Yep, he's great.
He is. I miss that guy. I miss that guy professionally and personally. And I'm super stoked that he's willing to be our occasional guest host here. Okay, so we do actually have topics other than reminiscing, believe it or not.
All right.
Believe it or not. And John put these, longtime listeners and readers may recognize John's fingerprints on these topics. So we also have two sponsors. We have both LinkedIn Jobs and Molecule. I'm pretty excited to talk about both of those later in the show. But we're going to start with the loaded question, John. Mm-hmm. The loaded question. Is Apple gouging customers?
Look, that's not leading at all. I don't know what you're getting at. It's a perfectly open-ended question. So let's start with the kinder, gentler view, which is undoubtedly going to be yours. What do you think?
You may be surprised by my answer. What I believe is the case, and is that Apple is gouging customers on RAM and SSD upgrades. What I worry is that there's something I don't know that means Apple is not gouging, and then I worry about being wrong on the technical side of things. Because, I mean, there's, you know, it's, I know just enough here to get myself in trouble.
So the fact that you worry about any of it just shows what a good person you are, because I don't worry at all. There was a stream of epithets that was going to fly out of my mouth after I just roped it in at the last second. So I don't care at all. And, you know, I agree with you in that I remember back in the day, the good old days, Brian, when some Apple equipment was actually price competitive if you wanted the same types of features, right?
Yeah, it was a situation where people would compare Apple Macs to entry level PCs and say that Apple is overcharging. But then if you put all the same things that the Macs came with out of the box into that PC, it was often the same price or even less than what the PC would cost to do the same thing with.
Correct.
And we're going back, what, 12 years, 10 years?
That's a good question when that kind of ebbed away, because it wasn't like wholesale all the products immediately at the same time. But probably a good, 2010, it was still that way. So so at least, I don't know, 7 years ago, I think it was still the case in a lot of cases.
Like after Steve passed away.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it on just Steve passing. I'm sure it's more complex than that, but it's an easy touchstone, at least in my very shoddy memory. So could be a plus or minus 5 years for all I know. Even setting aside when they were price competitive, back then they still gouged you on RAM and storage prices. But there was a good reason, at least historically before 2010, probably in the... it's a good question. What year when Tim Cook came on, did they finally stop all their bad inventory that they would keep and went to a just-in-time system where they were basically getting everything from China?
That was real early. That was real early in Tim Cook's
I think it was
role.
2000.
1999 or 2000.
98 maybe.
Well, I don't think it was as early as 98. We might have started talking about it in 99. I mean, obviously we're coming back almost 20 years here. And back then, Dell was the king of inventory management.
And they were using web objects that was written by Next Computers, which was kind of the irony, which helped them do their just-in-time system and ordering system.
And they were world renowned for having it was either 7 days or 3 days of inventory on hand, mm-hmm. and they were kicking everybody's butt. And then Apple just started routinely having, 36 hours, 48 hours, 24 hours worth of inventory on hand because they were doing everything just in time. We talked about it. Some of the Mac world talked about it, but the broader tech world didn't ever really seem to cotton on to what a revolutionary thing that Apple had apparently just quietly done.
Sure. It also put all their eggs in one basket production-wise from China, which wasn't the smartest thing, but that's another topic for another day. So, but before that date, whatever that date is, let's call it 2000, there was a lot of good reason for Apple kind of gouging you on prices for storage and RAM, because they'd buy huge inventories of this stuff. Who knows what the price would be? RAM has been known to trend up and down over time. Storage devices generally always stay flat or go down, but they'd buy a ton of this inventory. They weren't sure how the prices were going to be over the time.
It's not that they would buy the inventory, they would contractually obligate for that inventory, right? So they weren't buying it and then accepting it all at one time. They were saying, okay, we're going to buy X amount from you for this amount over the next X period of days.
Right. So it's almost like a currency hedge. Like, so you want to have some buffer in there. You're sending this to different regions all over the world in some cases. So you had to have some padding in there for that, and you could kind of understand it. But back then, it generally seemed to be that they would charge you roughly double, right? Roughly double for the RAM, roughly double of what the going rate for the storage was.
And my advice to people all the time would be to buy it with the minimum and upgrade it yourself.
Absolutely. And that was very good advice. Now we are at the point where Apple is charging way more than a double. They're charging like 4 to 6 times what the going rate is for some of this stuff. And in contrast, it just starts to look insane. It looks insane.
So give us an example.
So I think the best example is the 4 terabytes of SSD storage on the 2018 MacBook Pro.
Let me look this thing up. Keep going.
$3,200 is what they charge for the upgrade, meaning they take away whatever the base SSD is. You don't get to keep that. They take away the 512 gigabyte one and instead give you a non-upgradable 4 terabyte SSD.
Currently, I'm seeing a 2 terabyte SSD is the only option.
There's one for 4 on the 2018. You have to start with the higher end 15 inch model.
Yep, 15 inch model, touch bar, touch ID. You're wrong. Excuse me, you were right. I was wrong. I was looking at 13 inches. There it is. 4 terabytes, $3,200.
$3,200.
That's crazy. And I think that's insane.
It very much is. Let me put this
in context. At least it's soldered in.
Yeah, at least it's soldered in. Let me put this into context. Today, you can buy a 7.68 terabyte SATA SSD for $1,280. Basically 7.7 terabyte. Now, people are going to say, well, that's really a lot slower. And it's slower, true, because of the controller, not necessarily because of the storage in there. But even if you get NVMe RAM, which is the same speed or faster than what's going on in there, a 2 terabyte stick from Samsung of the same quality that's used in there is about $600. So you're talking to get the same amount of capacity, it's $1,200 versus the $3,200.
Yeah, it could be 14, right? It may be more difficult to stick 4 terabytes on a stick than 2.
It's
not necessarily just double though.
Yeah, it may not necessarily be that case, but the point being is it's wildly overpriced compared to what you can get out in the market. The 2 terabytes on the Mac Mini, I believe they're charging $1,200 for the upgrade. The upgrade, not the replacement.
That is right. I will make some sausage and check.
And so that's...
You can hear that it's working.
Yeah.
That sound, that pain in your ears means that it's working.
The difference, of course, is, and the RAM prices are pretty crazy.
Yeah,
as well. So
yeah, $1,400 for 64 gigs of RAM.
And the storage prices aren't as insane for some reason as well, which kind of hints at the gouging on the side of the iPad Pros. Right, it's obviously more expensive, but you're only talking a few hundred dollars more to go from.
OWC is charging for a 64 gig upgrade kit. They're charging $1,079, and Apple's charging $1,400. So
that's actually pretty close. That I can't complain about. Actually, that's not a terrible tax. But the SSD prices in particular are worrisome.
Okay, here's the thing though, John. What's the missing information? Is Apple crazy, or is there a reason for it?
I think it helps their margins. I think this is the most natural upsell, right? If you look at it too, Apple is the master of upsell. Like the iPad Pro is a great example in that You can get the more reasonable storage sizes, which probably for an iPad Pro somewhere in the around the 256 level is going to be good for most people. But if you go all the way up to the 1 terabyte, you get not just 1 terabyte of storage, you also get an extra 2 gigabytes of RAM. And some folks that I know were working on with the iPad Pro, and it's interesting. There's some kinds of rendering out on video that will work on the 6 gigabytes of RAM on the iPad Pro and kind of conk out on the lower end models. So for them, the RAM is kind of important. So it kind of upsells you on this, and now their average price and the margin that they have, the profit margin they're making on those is just gravy. You know, we're talking probably around 50% margin on those.
Okay. But that still falls in the realm of crazy in that it's so outrageous. It's so outrageous that it disincentivizes people to do it. So fine, it ups your margins, but is it worth it? Apparently it is. Okay. Either what you're saying is the case and it's worth it to Apple to offend people and turn people off to get those high margins, or there is another reason for it.
I mean, it's always possible that anything else could be there. But in this case, I think the simplest route is it makes them a lot more money. So why wouldn't they do this? They can get away with it, and they still offensive. Sell plenty of them.
It's offensive. It is offensive.
Let me ask you, is it offensive that Apple has not a single machine with upgradable storage, a single computer
yes.
that they sell with?
Well, no, not the way you're asking it. Is it offensive to me that iMac Pro doesn't have upgradable storage? Yes, that's offensive.
Or the smoke gray supposedly professional Mac Mini?
Yes. That should also have an upgradable storage.
Or over $7,000 MacBook Pro.
I'm less offended by, well, okay, see, then you get into the trade-off between form factor and function. And I believe that Apple errs way too much towards form factor over function.
I call balderdash on that argument. That argument is intellectually honest in a world where the form factors are like that. Please tell me why in an iMac Pro you cannot fit a 3.5-inch spinner.
No, we're talking about the MacBook Pro.
Right. Well, hold on. But it's not done in a Mac, in an iMac Pro.
I know, and it should be.
It's not done in a Mini.
It should be.
And similarly, there's plenty of room in there in the MacBook Pro to have the same kind of NVMe slotted.
I don't understand why Apple does this on the desktop machines in particular, when the amount, the price savings for soldering something in versus making it slottable are minimal.
Or Apple's gouging its customers, and this way forces you to buy way more RAM and storage right from the get-go. But the downside, I'm almost, as offensive as the prices are, I almost wouldn't mind just to get it over with. But the real problem is, 3 years from now, 4 terabytes isn't going to seem like that much for a giant iMac Pro. And like I said, currently you can get a 7.7 terabyte SSD for one third of what they're charging for a 4 terabyte SSD. Preventing people from getting more storage later on is just wacky.
So how comfortable are you with the idea that there is no technical reason for this price difference?
I think there's, I'm of two minds. I'm 65% or two-thirds sure that most of the reasoning is just that they can make
margins.
Money.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm one-third sure that there's probably some, ease of implementation on their part. The fact that some people are going to say this is superior to the things you can get out there is such bunk, because they always say the T2 chip is helping so much with, you know, encryption and controlling the hard drive and just getting that throughput. Let me tell you, the throughput on the new Mac Mini and the iMac Pro are laughable. They're pathetic. 3.5 gigabytes per second is what they do, which, you know, if you have an old machine, that sounds insanely fast. But it's so off from what the rest of the kind of desktop and professional world is with regard to computing. An average, mediocre ADATA NVMe stick does 3.5 gigabytes per second. And what's now common on the PC side, you can buy these cards from PCI card makers like High Point, where you have four of these NVMe sticks that you put in there. And on a single card, they're getting, get this, 12 gigabyte per second read-write speeds on these SSDs, dirt cheap. And this is the absolute insult to injury. You can take that same PC card, slap it into your old cheese grater Mac Pro, and still get 6 gigabytes per second. So in all cases, just kind of standard PC component tree is at the same speed, if not faster, than stuff that's supposed to go on with the T2 that's encrypted. Supposedly superior.
Encrypted.
You can totally have this encrypted. Yeah, I mean, is it hardware encrypted? Some of it is, some of it isn't. You can, and you'll still get speeds that spank that. And the encryption, you know, some people say it's for your security, and I say, you know, seems like it's a great way to make sure that you can upgrade. Because it's slotted, the iMac Pro has slots for the SSDs, but because the T2 chip is there, you can't put anything else in there. It's all tied in. It won't work. I mean, so is that for our safety, or is that for Apple's profit margin? I think more people could disagree, but
I think on this one, it's a little from column A, a little from column B.
I could see how people say that, but you could see there's a lot of data points also lined up that this inures to the benefit of greed, and it does not inure to a pro. A pro wants, if you're dealing with 4K video files, you don't want to hear how awesome the T2 chip is when you could be getting 4x the speed on very vanilla hardware in the PC world that costs, you know, way less.
Okay, well, you're very familiar with Jeffen's Razor.
Yes, I am.
Apple knows these things at least as well as you do. Right?
I disagree with that.
Are you kidding? They've got people that are keeping an eye on what's doing.
I knew way earlier than they did that they're making a mistake with the Trash Can Mac.
That's not what I'm saying. Not what I'm saying, because you're right. The Trash Can Mac was just an embarrassment of a massive mistake, despite how gorgeous that thing. You do agree that it's gorgeous.
Oh,
right?
The thing is so pretty, you want to lick it. It's a piece of art. It's bad at its purpose. If they put it out as a Mac Mini Pro, everyone would have been thrilled.
Yeah, priced accordingly.
Yep.
Right. So what I'm saying that Apple knows is the state of the industry. Right. They know the throughput that can be gotten on vanilla PC hardware.
I think so.
I refuse to believe I live in a world where Apple doesn't have at least an inkling of what its competitors are doing. And mm-hmm. while Apple seldom chases its competitors and is very successful not chasing competitors, why in the world would they be so uncompetitive on this particular front? Why would they choose to be so uncompetitive on price?
Because Apple doesn't care about the Mac, and Apple makes no pro computers. They make zero pro computers. In my opinion, if you don't have upgradable usable user storage, you do not make a pro machine. Period. And people are going to say, well, pros are really creative pros. And I'm like, no. People at Pixar who don't care what the size of their hard drive is because they have some backing, you know, mega server thing, are not pros, or not the only pros. Apple, during their apology tour for the awful Trash Can Mac disaster, said, you know, pros are not just this very narrow thing. They're not just illustrators or web developers or Pixar awesome folks, right? Those, and not to mention, those weren't, the Pixar people weren't the people that saved Apple in 1996 and stuck with Apple. It was enthusiasts and power users and a real wide bevy of pros. And those people are offended where 2 years later, they can't upgrade their hard drive. They're offended by it.
I don't know that they are offended. I think, John, that you...
So you had no problems when you couldn't upgrade the storage in your iMac, right?
That's not what I'm saying. And my iMac is not an iMac Pro. And I am radically offended that I have to split the case. I am radically offended that I can't pop a door open. But my thing is that I don't think there are many people that have.
Many people is not the question. I agree with you. This is a minority, but
hold
this
on,
is a very
hold on.
Minority.
Let me finish saying my thing before you agree with
me. I apologize. Go ahead.
I don't think that many people have your somewhat radical view on like what is acceptable. Like I mean, the number of people who are complaining that they can't have 10 displays set up.
Come on,
it's not a market.
Now you're building a new straw man. I agree about that. But just upgrading your storage a few years later is not a crazy thing.
Yeah, that is true. I like why my iMac does not have an access port to allow me to get to the storage unit in there is infuriating.
And the
and
Mac
you,
Mini,
you can have my apology.
And the Mac Mini, people talk about the Thunderbolt ports being enough. The Thunderbolt ports max out at 5 gigabytes. A single NVMe stick does 3.5 gigabytes. This is not to mention you'll have something dangling off of it. And some people that are enthusiasts with what they want to do with the Mac Mini, they want a single thing. They don't want like dongles and stuff hanging off this thing. It's the same mistake saying, well, it was just great. You know, if that was acceptable, then the last Trash Can Mac Pro would have been a flaming success its octopus of wires.
So again, Apple has this data. Apple has acknowledged that the Trash Can Mac was a mistake, for instance, as you've already pointed out. Why are they doing this?
I don't think they care about the Mac. I don't know that they care. I think they're going with this narrative of, you know, iPads are your new computer, and which for maybe the vast majority of people is the case, but there's still this group of people that need.
For instance, the people that make iPad software.
Right. that still need more capable systems and are enthusiasts. There's nothing wrong. Like, the people that are enthusiasts tend to disproportionately motivate other people. Now, whether or not Apple still needs this halo effect when they're the largest company on earth, you know, maybe the answer is who cares anymore, but you never know. You never know. I don't see why you would disengage this such a loyal group of people, and Apple has. And right now they make zero pro machines. They make zero machines with upgradable storage. They make zero machines that are competitive with mediocre machines in the industry where I'm getting, not to mention, not only can you get 12 gigabytes per second with just one of these cards, which is relatively cheap in what you slap in there, you could have two of these cards together and all of a sudden you've got 25 gigabytes per second throughput. Just think 25 gigabytes per second throughput on storage is what our buses used to be a couple of years ago. It like radically changes what you can do with video and all kinds of like large computing projects that people have. It's like groundbreaking stuff. And this is on mediocre hardware in the PC world. And Apple just doesn't care.
I suspect that is the case. Apple does not care about the Mac anymore, or at least the people. I mean, like, I'm sure that there are people within Apple that do care about the Mac, and Apple still uses Macs to make all the other stuff. But the increasing evidence that we're getting is that Apple doesn't care about the Mac. I hate to have to agree with you on that, but the evidence is what the evidence is.
You know, it's interesting. Honda used to be known for kind of cheap performance cars back in the 90s, and it had a huge enthusiast cult following. And it's funny, there are people that are kind of more well off and rich now, and they go back and try to find pristine versions of old Acura Integras and these older Honda cars, and they pay crazy premiums for them. And no, there is no youth culture today that gives a darn about these cars, because they lost it. And now they realize that they really lost some great marketing by not
you're
having
referring to the car
products,
industry.
Yeah, for this segment. And Apple may one day find it. It's the same thing. You don't cross the most loyal users. It's not like they're going to lose money with this. You know, maybe the profit they make is inconsequential, but. As you've said many times, there's no reason why these guys can't, you know, walk and chew gum at the same time. And they have all the resources, all the money. They should be able to put out reasonable products that their fans really like. Why is it Apple is so averse to giving some of its customers stuff that they'd like? It's fine for them to advance it and give us new things that we like, but why did it take so long to just have a mediocre upgrade of a MacBook Air, to put in a Retina display, to put in a worse processor, by the way, than we used to have? Like, the speed of the i7 of the old MacBook Air is basically the same speed as the i5 now. Nobody says this. They compare the i5 to the i5, but the top of the line of that machine 4 years ago is the same as the speed now, and that the new machine costs more. All to get a Retina display.
So I have a theory for you. Mm-hmm. All right. So I had a theory once upon a time that the big drought in Apple products was because Johnny Ive and his design team were all mucking about with Apple Park.
Right.
And it seemed, as Apple Park was wrapping up before Apple Park officially opened, that we, you know, the floodgates had finally been opened and we were going to get all these new products. And then, you know, just as quickly, you know, like Captain Lucy Cook yanked the football away from us as we went to go kick it. And once again, you know, we seem to have kind of a dearth of new products. Now, here's my new theory. So in other words, I'm not putting a lot of stock in my previous theory on this. So, you know, take that with a grain of salt here. What if Apple is in a holding pattern on the Mac, rightly or wrongly, mind you, and wrongly, while they are working on this transition to their own processors for the Mac? And that, and that once we finally get those Apple processors in the Macs, then we're finally going to get all the glorious upgrades every year. What do you think?
I love that you're such an optimistic person. There are days that are very dark in my life, and then I hear this ray of sunshine, and I'm like, you know what? It's not that bad. But yeah, I don't think that's the case, because here's one thing
What if I want it to be the case?
Click your heels, man. Click your heels. I can't wait to see you dance around this one.
Okay.
You know, for many, 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 many years, Tim Cook has been telling us about the deep pipeline.
Uh-huh. No. That's the next topic. That's the next topic.
All right. Don't you have a sponsor?
Yeah, we have a sponsor to attend to this week. We're going to start off with Molecule. Have you heard of these guys?
I've seen some of the pics. It's like a really awesome looking air purifier.
Yeah,
it's all I know about it.
Yeah.
It looks cool.
Yeah, I went and bought two of them because we had forest fires in California. And this was months ago. This is like when they first started sponsoring it. That's how I learned about them, is when they started sponsoring the show, as a matter of fact. And I'm like, you know, I've been through forest fires with where heavy particulates, the air quality just goes to crap. And I'm going to grab a couple of these while I can, while I have the money to do so, because I want them in my house in case the air gets bad. And goodness gracious, am I glad I did, because this campfire, you've heard about the campfire up in Northern California.
I think a little bigger than a campfire, unfortunately, at this point.
Yeah, it's horrific. And And all of that is blowing right into Silicon Valley. I've had air quality up to 177 that I've noticed, which is just unhealthy as can be. And so I'm so glad I've got these things in the house. And here is the deal with these things. One is that they don't use, it's not just like a HEPA filter. They're using a variety of, what do they call it, photoelectrochemical oxidation, or PECO, nanotechnology to eliminate allergens, mold, bacteria, viruses, and airborne chemicals. And they're also treating this stuff with light.
That's good, too. So I've been using air filters for, I think, it might be close to 10 years now, Walt got me into them, and mine are ancient at this point, and I need to upgrade them soon. Just because here in New York City, I used to work at 30 Rock, which is it's a glorious but very old building. It still had, like, you know, the mail dollies, little, you know, that cart between floors and whatnot. Walt used to have an air filter there, and he checked it and showed me, and it was so black that it scared me that's what I'm breathing every day at work. So he turned me on to those things. So this sounds really cool, because the ones I have are like you said, they're just HEPA based, and they get out a lot, but this sounds like it's even more advanced.
It really is. I've loved them. And they also, they don't emphasize this in the materials, the talking points that they give us, but in silent mode, you can't hear it. It is actually silent. I mean, you can rev it up to higher speeds. Like, you know, if you've got something going on in your house and you really want to take care of the air. But most of the time I leave mine in silent mode. I can't hear them. I love these things. I am so glad I bought them. I will also note that they've been extensively tested by third parties. Molecules claims on this technology have been tested and verified by third-party laboratories like the University of Minnesota Particle Calibration Laboratory and University of South Florida Center for Biological Defense. Molecules technology has been personally effective and verified by science, but most importantly, it's been tested by real people. That includes me. Molecule has already helped allergy and asthma sufferers around the country better cope with their conditions and significantly reduce their symptoms. And here's the thing, they're sponsoring us, so that means that you get a discount. Get 75 nice. Bucks off of your first order. You visit moleKule.com, moleKule.com, and at checkout, enter promo code ACM. It's going to get you $75 off of your first order. And again, that's moleKule.com, molecule.com. And at checkout, enter promo code ACM. All right. We appreciate them sponsoring us. I've got air quality right now. Air quality. Oh my God. Highest I've seen it. 181. That is terrible. That's what my air quality outside is right now.
I don't know what that means, but I'm looking at the website. This has got to be the prettiest air purifier I've seen. So if you have to have something around your house,
at 90, your AQI becomes unhealthy.
Ah,
okay. At 150, and that's an orange unhealthy. At 150, it becomes red unhealthy. I'm sitting at 181 right now, thanks to my Apple Watch. I'm checking that 181. That's anyways. I'm glad I got these things.
Nice.
Yeah. All right, so now you are going to blather on about the deep pipeline, which you're always on about.
Dude, come on. At some point, you have to give in and just say that it was baloney. Because how many years do we have to wait to deliver for that deep pipeline to really have massive, massive payoff? There's been no massive payoff. There's been massive letdowns for years.
Here's my problem. My problem is that we know other things that Apple is working on that they haven't released yet. And if they do,
you started talking about it like 8 years ago about the deep pipeline. Is this a 20-year plan to get something out? Come on. The first time he said the deep pipeline 8 years ago, that came due. That ticket came due.
Okay. You know, you make a point. You make a point. In particular, the dearth, the horrid years. Was it 2015 that was so bad, or 2016?
Yeah, something like that.
One of the, that was like 14 new products ship the whole year, right? And that was, in fact, many years after Tim Cook had been talking about the deep pipeline.
Yeah.
I mean, see, it's my thing, John, is that I do expect Apple to deliver on non-invasive glucose monitoring. I do expect Apple to deliver something in the car space. I do expect Apple to deliver some kind of innovation, or at least continued services in the medical data storage and management industry. Right? I expect those things to come out, and I expect that those are part of the so-called deep pipeline. Where Apple has been letting us down is in the product lines they already have, where we want them to continue to innovate and iterate.
Yes. Yes. I think this ties in with what will be our last topic of, you know, what could iOS, what improvements could we have in iOS is part of it. But think about how long we waited for the Mac Mini. Was it 5 years?
It's 1,500 days.
Yeah. All right, dude. So in 1,500 days, what they gave us is, again, I wish I could curse properly for this. What they gave us is, here's your, you know, let them have cake, Mac Mini. They just took whatever were the commonly released things out today. And people are such Stockholm Syndrome sufferers in the Apple world. They're like, oh my gosh, it's so great. What's so great? They took the current gen Intel chip, which, by the way, is kind of stinky, and the current gen, you know, NVMe speed SSD that they soldered in, made unupgradable. They gave you two SODIMMs for RAM upgrades. They use the same case, which is even more insulting because there's clearly space for a 2.5-inch drive there. That they're just like, whatever. We know we could have made this upgradable for you, but you know what? We just don't care. They did, and they put in what? Thunderbolt 3 ports? Like, how do you get credit for this? It's just putting in what are common components today. After 5 years, they did nothing.
They didn't do nothing. They just didn't do a, we've been waiting 5 years for this. Okay. I mean, they did the bare minimum that was necessary. That's not nothing.
Okay.
Mostly pedantic, but
yes, yes. I'm being a smidge hyperbolic, but I think you get the spirit of my comments. It's so pathetic. Again, the MacBook Air is the most uninspired thing ever. They made the bezel smaller on the screen. Wow, here's a cookie. And then they used an i5 processor. They didn't even bother making a model with an i7. Just like, you know what? We don't care. We don't care. You'll just take this slop. You'll eat anything we give you. They overpriced 1.5 terabytes of storage at the max on it. And it performs basically the same speed as the topped out one that's 4 years old.
Really?
I mean, it's
wait.
It's
have awful. You seen like Geekbench?
Yeah, yeah. I'm the only one that points this out. None of the other pundits and testers point. They always test out the i5 compared to the i5. I'm like, okay, well, that's nice. There's like a 10% improvement maybe there. But when you test the i7, which was an option on the old model, and is no longer an option today, which, by the way, you know, has more threads than the i5 does today, because the i5 doesn't have multiple threads. It turned out that it was basically a wash speed-wise.
Yeah, that's annoying and frustrating, especially since I need to get one.
It's just so uninspired. It's just so let them eat cake. I don't care. Here's slop. Go on, peasant. And make sure you overpay for this in the meantime. It's so all this deep pipeline. So when Tim Cook, four and 5 years ago, was telling us about the deep pipeline for the Mac Mini and the MacBook Air, right? That's what we were looking forward to. When he's saying we've got amazing things in this deep pipeline, that we had a desert of no Mac Mini, of no MacBook Air updates.
And no Mac Pro. Don't forget the Mac Pro.
Well, that's still a desert. But my point is the payoff. This was our payoff for 4 and 5 years of nothing. This was what was the amazing things in the deep pipeline. Come on. Come on.
Okay. My original point still applies. My original point is that the pipeline is, we want the deep pipeline to refer essentially exclusively, or at least predominantly, to the products that we want iterated and innovated. And I agree with you there. I just think there's more to the pipeline than that.
You may be right, but there's no excuse that if you don't look at a computer and you can't think of more cool things to do with it, it's on you. You know, you're burnt out. Great. Find someone that's not burnt out. Find someone that's excited and thinks this stuff is cool and actually wants to do something cool with it.
Yeah. Because again, Apple has all the money.
Right. Right. It's just sad. Have I heard a beleaguered admission that the deep pipeline is at the very least, partially a bunch of bunk?
No, because I think I think that the pipeline is bigger than you want it to apply to. But I agree with you. Where you want it to apply to is an area that I also want it to apply to, and that it is completely and totally insufficient. Like, why haven't we had right now? What do we need? We need an iMac Pro update. That device was announced a year and 5 months ago, and it shipped a year ago. Right? We need an iMac update. And, of course, we're still waiting on our Mac Pro update that is going to be either next year or the year after.
So the one good thing is, and we kind of disagree, where the big pipeline might actually pay off, where I'll give it to you, is my prediction that the first Mac... And we disagree. You think the first Mac that's going to have Apple processors is a Mac Pro. I think the first Mac that's going to have Apple processors is the MacBook. And the reason I think that is the MacBook currently has the most anemic processors in the world. The very mobile versions of the Intel, it's a dual core chip that runs like a maximum 1.4 gigahertz, very slow. If you put in an A12X, in that MacBook, you're going to have an 8-core chip in there that is going to spank the previous chip by like a factor of, I think, over, like, it's going to be like 200-300% faster. And
of course, it would be the A12X. It would actually be another iteration. So it could be better.
Yeah, it could be even better. And the battery life, of course, is going to be way better because it's a much more lower power part as well. Not to mention it's 7 nanometers compared to the pathetic Intel's 14 nanometer build.
Does Apple want its MacBook comparing favorably to its MacBook Pro?
I think that's the best way to say, look, this is our entry level machine and look how much better it is, right? It will be better in every statistic when you compare it over the previous one. Just think of the chart topping slide they can do.
But then MacBook Pro sales die.
Well, I think there needs to be some transition for the Pro products because there's a lot of folks that still do a lot of folks in the niche. there's still a significant number of people that need Intel compatibility with virtualization and whatnot. And you're going to need a lot more.
If they can deliver
they're going to need a lot more speed than the current level of Apple processors can handle. So, meaning if they go through three or four iterations as they build up towards the Mac Pro, of beefing the abilities of those chips up, eventually they'll get to a speed where the virtualization can come, but not with these early states. These early states are great for native. I don't think they're going to be great for virtualization. Because even the Intel chips today have a tough time with virtualizations, and they're outright native. So I think that gives them some, you know, a year or two kind of transition before they get to the real top level stuff. And the Xeons are the one place that actually, and the AMD Threadripper class chips are the one place where the Intel and AMD world is still far ahead of these chips. But kind of for your average laptop desktop work, the current A12X is a monster.
It is, and I see the reasoning you're going through there. The reason, John, that I thought that the Mac Pro would be the first device is simply as a way to explain how long it's taking in the first place. So, like, there's no reason for whatever this new Pro machine they're doing to take this long because they announced it a year and a half ago.
Uh-huh.
Right?
So what was the reason for the Mac Mini to take how long it did?
No, there's no reason. It shouldn't have. It's ridiculous.
And yet it came out with the same vanilla chip, right? The current chip.
Okay, so what your argument right now is never explain to far-flung vision what can be attributed instead to incompetence.
Kind of, and I think there needs to be a corollary to Chaffin's razor. A lot of times it's true you don't have insight, but a lot of times it's just so blunt that you don't want to accept it, which is they're just lazy and didn't want to do it. That's the Mac Mini's explanation. You got a better, I mean, that, or there was, you know, a fire where the four engineers that did this, you know, and where they were in a coma for 4 years, you know, but I'm going to go with sloth and lack of care. And I bet you I'm right. I bet you a dollar I'm right. Just didn't care. That's the reason for the Mac Mini.
Okay, that may be. Nonetheless, so a year and a half ago, we first started, like Apple itself started saying, yep, I'm screwed up on the Mac Pro. We're going to do a new Mac Pro. It's going to be really awesome. It's going to be modular. Oh, and by the way, it's going to be 2019, maybe 2020. You know, we'll get back to you on that. Like they were clearly already working. There's just no reason for it to take 2 years. There is zero reason for it to take 2 years unless they're waiting for something like our new processor.
Says the person that just talked about the 4 year gap on the Mac Mini, where they.
But it's different that we don't know that they were ever doing anything with the Mac Mini, and they probably weren't. But the difference between the Mac Mini and the Mac Pro is that Apple has said we're going to do this thing.
They said that, but they also said we messed up. So there's no reason for them to show, oh, well, here's the real reason it took a long time. We know the real reason. They screwed up. They don't have to, you know, re-apologize. They've already apologized for screwing up. So I don't. You may be right. I think I'm going to be right on this, that the first one is going to be, if not the MacBook, something more in that class. Than towards the, you know, Mac Pro line.
Well,
but I've been wrong before, so who knows?
And I've been wrong. I'm also the guy who said that Apple would never, never replace Lightning with USB-C.
Yeah, I wasn't as confident as you were about that, but yep.
So, you know, again, have a big bag of salt on hand. But sure. You know what? I'm going to pat myself on the back. I'm also the guy who said that Apple would compete with netbooks with an iPod Super Touch. I nailed that one.
Yep.
I nailed that one hard.
Yep.
Hard. All right. So, what have I done for you lately with my with my prognostications? So there, you could also separate what you're saying and what I'm saying about the Mac Pro, and even if the Mac Pro is waiting for Apple processors, that doesn't mean that it'll be the first one with the Apple processor. Doesn't necessarily mean.
Yeah, I guess
right? We'll see. So, you know, the Mac Pro could ship with some sort of Mondo Apple multi-core processor, but you know, the MacBook with an Apple processor may well ship first.
Anyway, the point being is, if they come out with a machine that's transitioning kind of to this new OS and whatnot, yeah, that's a pretty big deal. So that could qualify a little bit of your big pipeline. But frankly, you guys give a lot more credit to a change in processor than I do, because I just know what the next architecture software is all about, and it's frankly trivial. To just go to a new architecture, relatively speaking, in the world of things that are really hard to do on the computer side, this is not among them. It'll be a big change, kind of, just because it's always a big change to go to a new processor, but technologically.
That's actually something that Apple has managed fabulously well every time.
Yeah.
Every single time.
Yeah. Anyway, I just don't think that they have not been. We have not seen the fruits off a very, 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 very deep pipeline. I guess we will continue to argue about that, and at some point you will give in. I'm going to hold my breath until that day. I'm going to hold out.
You apparently are just meeting me, and are either that or you've forgotten how willing I am to stick to my guns.
I know, but the good news is eventually when you're proven wrong, you will eventually
get in it. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And it'll be sweet, 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 sweet nectar for me. I will readily, on that day.
Readily acknowledge that. All right. So in the meanwhile, LinkedIn jobs. Now, I've been in the situation where like hiring the right person at the right time was like just change everything that you're doing, and getting that right person for the right job can be difficult, especially if you're not going to the right place. So the question is, where do you find that right person for the right job? You can post it on a job board, sure, and you can hope that the right person will find it, but how often do you hang out on job boards, right? Like, you know, are you, like the people out there listening to me, are you hanging out there on job boards? Well, it may well mean that a lot of other people aren't either. So don't leave finding someone great to chance when you can post it in a place where people are going to go every day to make their connections, grow in their career, discover job opportunities. And of course, I'm talking about LinkedIn. Most LinkedIn members haven't recently visited the top job boards. But 9 out of 10 are open to new opportunities. And with 70% of the U.S. workforce on LinkedIn, 70%, posting on LinkedIn is the best way to get your job opportunity in front of more of the right people. People who are qualified for your role and ready for something new, it is the best way to find the person who will help you grow your business. And that's why a new hire is made every 10 seconds using LinkedIn, which is pretty phenomenal. So here is what you do. Because you are listening to this show, you're going to get a chance for a discount. Not a chance. You get a discount. Hurry to LinkedIn.com/ACM and get $50 off of your first job post. That's LinkedIn.com/ACM. Get $50 off of your job post. LinkedIn.com/ACM. Of course, terms and conditions apply because lawyers always get their say on that. No offense, John. So definitely, absolutely, and positively check out LinkedIn.com/ACM. Get $50 off that first job post and show them the same kind of love that they're showing us.
You know what I use LinkedIn for all the time?
What's that?
People's photos. I love I have contact. Just like
you're
everyone,
a very
contact.
Visual person.
What's that?
You were a very visual person.
Yeah, yeah. And especially when you have a lot of chats and emails and stuff going on, because mail has a feature that they don't really advertise well, where you can, to the side of your incoming emails, have the person's face. Kind of like you can also do that in messages as well. And so if you populate the people you talk to, their contacts in your address book with their face, whenever they text you or send you an email, you'll see their face pop up. And it's great. Like it makes sorting through a lot of messages and emails, real easy. And, you know, people don't, it's kind of weird to ask a person, hey, would you mind, sending me your photo? This isn't creepy at all. It's not a weird psycho.
Yeah.
Creep fest. But anyway, so this, you could just go on LinkedIn and grab their photos and add it to your contacts. I wish they made a service that where that would like happen automatically. I would totally do that and people update their contacts and whatnot. But anyway, I use it all the time for that. And it's nice that they make that possible.
Well, that is nice. That is nice. All right. So you had, let's see here. I know you had a fourth topic and I already forgot what it was. Oh yeah. You were like, you think that iOS doesn't have some things it needs to have.
I think iOS is suffering the malaise of the deep pipelines non-production. There's some stuff that people have been asking for so long, and it almost seems at this point that Apple is not implementing them out of spite. But, I mean, do you have some features before I roll on my rant that you'd like to see? Or things that you don't think are working so well that you'd like to see fixed?
Well, so first of all, remember that this is me. And I don't prep shows.
Yes.
So, no, but
I also remember it's you who are able to rant about anything at the drop of a hat.
This is true. It's a gift and a curse. So let me throw that back at you and say, okay. Why don't you start off and then maybe that'll spark some thoughts in me.
Okay. So the two biggest ones that I don't understand is why there's no mouse support and why there's no real file system support. They added their really stinky files app and everyone was hopeful, but it turned out that they managed to make an app that in theory lets you manage your files, but really doesn't. It kind of lets you manage files between apps more than really have a file system that you can kind of prep things for.
But it was never promised as a file system.
No, it wasn't. I think people were overloading their hopes and dreams onto it.
Yeah, especially you, because, you know, bracket, John.
You're absolutely right, me, but I don't think I was alone on this. Come on. I think a lot of people were disappointed with what they gave. So real file system support and mouse support. And, you know, I think Andrew wrote an interesting article, or he commented on an article or something to that effect, where he's like, you know, I hope they never add mouse support to the iPads and
iOS. Yeah, I heard you pop a vein from here.
And so I made some comments. One, I never understood, like, when people are like spitefully, I hope you never get that thing that you're hoping for to come to pass, as if it hurts me, right? You know, like, oh, I want to make sure you never get that feature, even though I don't have to use it. But it's kind of weird to me. And part of his thinking, and I think if I understand it, part of his thinking was, this is such old stuff, you know, us old people stuck with our old paradigms. And I'm like, you know, the keyboard's a touch bit older than the mouse and trackpad. And yet Apple, you know, has keyboard support and people are very productive with keyboard support when they need to use it. I guess the fear is this talk about old thinking is kind of the old school Microsoft tablet OS, right, that they did before the iPad came out, where they gave you a stylus and they basically let you use Microsoft Windows and Office and whatnot without really modifying it in any meaningful way. So you're using what it was, a mouse-based operating system now with a stylus, which was awful. It was an awful experience. And that's the fear. But Apple showed pretty clearly that, you know, Steve Jobs said, thou shalt never have a stylus. They designed the OS to be
a touch-based one. You got 10 of them on the end of your hand. Coo-coo-doo-coo-doo.
And yet, they added a stylus, and it didn't, you know.
Yeah, you know why? You know why? Because your finger is a terrible stylus. And still, and it, like of all the ignominies that heaped upon us by Steve Jobs, most of the time he was right. But on that one, he was dead wrong. He was right from the standpoint that a touch system should never depend or require a stylus. He was wrong about the need for an optional stylus. And I am still outraged about that.
I don't know that he was wrong, because it's I view it in the same vein of him saying, we'll never have an iPod with video. Why would you want that? And then next year there's an iPod with video.
You could be right, but it was said differently. It was said differently.
So, you may be right. So the point being, what it shows is, as long as you implement these input devices in an intelligent way, they're very useful. So when you're writing and you want to write something a little bit more long form and you have the ability to use a keyboard on an iPad, it's great. And when you're an illustrator and you have creative stuff you want to do, it's much better than your pencil to have a stylus. And similarly, if you're a programmer and you might want to do some Xcode, or if you want to do some creation for a presentation or a really complex word processing document or something like that, where you type a lot, you don't want to break the plane and lift your hand and go to it. It would be great to have some trackpad support. This is really no-brainer stuff. And at this point, them not including it is almost spiteful. Just like holding their breath, it's their old argument of, which actually bites against them. They're like, well, you would never want a Mac with a touch screen because you got to lift your hand. And it's true. You have to break the plane and do that. But, you know, there are ways to solve that. Like, I don't know, put the screen flat down or down at an angle. There are ways to deal with this, and it's about applying some intellect to do so. Adding trackpad support to the Mac, especially when there is trackpad mode, literally by holding the space bar on the on-screen keyboard that you get, which still isn't as good as a trackpad because you have to break the plane to do that, right? You have to actually put your hand onto the screen to do that, which sometimes can be useful, but sometimes can be annoying. This should just be added. I don't understand why this is even a discussion anymore. Someone needs to be slapped around like really violently at Apple until this happens.
I agree.
So file system and mouse are the oldest one. I mean, people have been asking it, I think, since 2010, since the iPad came out. Like, please add that. Another one I want is split screen mode on at least the very big iPhones, like on the iPhone Max. There's no reason why you can't have side by side, like your texts and a web browser.
On what device?
On something like the big iPhones, like the iPhone.
Like
the Max. Yeah. And up to four split screens on an iPad. Instead of just left and right, it'd be great to have up to quadrants or have the top part and then two on the bottom. I think you could easily support up to four simultaneous things, especially with the power of the new iPad.
Who besides you was asking for that?
Not a lot of people. It's really the power users that do that. If you've ever played with on Samsung devices, they have up to three views. It works very naturally.
Have you?
Yeah, I have. And it's kind of like, I don't do this on Macs, but Walt and other people I know, they have the snap to screen stuff. All those snap to screen tools seem to work really well up to four. And once you go beyond that, it becomes a hot mess. So I think getting up to four there would be cool. I got two more suggestions. I'll start with the one that I think is a no-brainer, and you wonder why they haven't done it yet, and then I'll go to one that's more controversial and more pipeline related. So the other one I like is, you have an Apple TV, right?
Two of them.
Excellent. So do you use the home screen sync feature between the two?
I do.
Isn't it awesome to only have to arrange your folders and stuff on one machine and it automatically does it on the other?
Yes. And it's also awesome to have a show that I just closed on one be there for me on the other.
Why can I not have that on my multiple iPhones and iPads?
You know, that's such a good question, especially go back. There's this interview with Steve Jobs that I have tried my best to find. More than a decade, I've tried to find it again and have never been able to find it. But it was an interview with him where he talked about basically how awesome it was that his next box would pull up its desktop remotely.
Oh my God. I know exactly the video you're talking about.
No, this was a written interview. He may talk about it in a video also, but there was a written story that was based on a conversation with him, and it was right before he went back to Apple or while he was still at Apple. And he talked about just how awesome it was to always be able to pull up his home screen from wherever he was, because the home screen really his whatever next box he had in front of him was actually a thin client. Essentially,
it's not a thin client. It's better than a thin client. I remember this feature when we worked at Next, and of course Steve had this set up because he had a T1 line to his house.
Right. There was that little bit. He somehow didn't emphasize that when he was talking about how superior it was.
He also there's this great database that kind of didn't survive the transition to Apple called NetInfo database, which let incredible like regional mapping of kind of IT resources. Anyway, believe it or not, that feature exists on Apple. And they don't publicize it. And I'm going to try to implement it next year. I'm going to get a Mac Mini, and it's called it's a remote account. You have to create the account on the server version of Mac OS, mm-hmm. and then anywhere you log in, assuming you can VPN to the local network, your account just comes on, and it works a bit more. It doesn't work like a thin client. It works a bit like a mixture between a thin client and a Dropbox. So it literally syncs everything from the master version of it up in the cloud somewhere, right, onto your local Mac. It literally copies everything down. God, and then if you update it,
I want my local Mac to be the cloud, though.
All your fonts, all your apps, all your data.
Are you hearing me there? Are you hearing me there? I don't want it synced to the cloud. I want my, I want whatever I'm designating as my central server to be my cloud.
Right, right. So the Mac Mini, meaning like you just have a Mac Mini in your house, right?
Yeah, and, or even have my iMac be the one.
Right, yeah. So, but you have to run it under, at least the way it's currently set up, you have to have server running on it, and you have to instantiate and create that account.
Okay, fine. Yeah, I would happily set up a server to do just that.
Dude, we're with you. Maybe by next year, I'll give this a go and see if I can get it to work.
Oh, Dave, man, we got to write about it. We got to write about that.
So, but anyway, this existed on Next Step for like forever. It was a little technically difficult back then than it is now. But it's a cool feature. But before we get, you know, a baby step, before everyone has their own personal cloud remote server account, why can't I just get my freaking apps and folders and settings synced between my iOS devices?
Would be easier. It would be much simpler on iOS because you don't have one device licenses to worry about.
Right. And the crazy thing is they implemented it on the device that needs it absolutely the least, the Apple TV. Everyone has at this point, multiple iPads and you have an iPhone. I would love for my folder structure that took me years to, get right on my iPhone to just, magically appear on my iPads. That would be awesome.
But would you be okay with that going through the cloud? You don't want, you're like super paranoid about the cloud. There is no cloud.
Well, I hate the cloud. I think it's generally bad. But all this stuff, the way that Apple implements the cloud is a little different, right? In that you've purchased all your stuff up at the Apple Store, at the App Store. So I already purchased whatever my copy of Dungeons and Dragons game, and I've made my folder structure. So what happens there is it doesn't keep a version of that up there. It just keeps pointers to like the file structure there. It's kind of like an iMessage. You could sync it that way. I don't know how they technically have implemented the shared thing, but it doesn't mean you keep all your data up there.
Wouldn't you rather control the server?
Oh, I would. I absolutely would. But
sure
on
I
iOS,
understand.
but on iOS, it's kind of okay because at least with the folder and app structure, all that really is master copied up at the App Store anyway, right? It's always like when you rebuild your phone, it basically redownloads all the apps and reinstalls them all when you do a restore.
Okay.
Right. And your data is local on the device. It's a different question whether we start syncing data back and forth, but to the extent that there is already iCloud data up there, why not just sync it? Like, why do I have to recreate every device? All right. So I think we agree on that one. We should have home sync between iOS devices. All right. Here's the controversial one and the one that would actually make Apple not stink. And
make it count because we're running out of time.
Are you familiar with Samsung DeX?
No.
So if you Google and you look up Samsung DeX, they've done something. It's the right idea implemented poorly. But basically, it lets you plug your iPhone, your Android phone into a computer screen, a monitor, a keyboard, and a mouse, and it presents you with a desktop. An Android desktop workspace. So now it works like a desktop. I would like a DeX-like thing for the iPhone and iPad where when I plug it in, it starts to work like a Mac. Where I have Mac-level desktop apps, I could use a mouse and keyboard. And when I plug it into that mode, all of a sudden, the apps are more fully functional. And the Marzipan type stuff would allow that. That would be breathtaking.
That's not happening anytime soon.
I didn't say it was, but that's what I'd like to see.
Well, you originally pitched me as what the stuff you want to see in iOS 13. This is like iOS. This is like iOS 16 stuff.
No, I think. Listen, what I'd like to see is what do I expect to see? It's a different question.
Okay,
you
got to
be careful with your questions.
Yeah. Okay, my mistake. my that one's on me, that's for sure.
Yeah, for someone that's mostly pedantic, you should understand.
All right, let's. We are like way over our time, and I didn't realize that. I would like to take up this particular topic with you again because I think there's a lot more room to discuss what could be done with iOS that's not being done yet. I think there's a lot more meat on this bone.
Sure.
And we can chew it. Mm. It'll be fantastic. All right, so now what you don't realize is that I'm about to play a bumper that you're not going to hear. Right? So you're going to bear with me here and we're going to do this thing here.
Okay.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to add, comment on, question, write us at acm@macobserver.com.
And our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded for TMO. That's all for this week.
We'd like to think, or I would like to think at the very least, LinkedIn Jobs for sponsoring us, as well as Molecule. You can go to linkedin.com/ACM, get $50 off of your first job posting. And if you use coupon code, promo code even, ACM over at MOLEKULE.com, molecule.com, you'll get $75 off your first order. And in the meanwhile, stay subscribed. We'll see you online at the Mac Observer. Thanks, John.
Thanks, Brian.
Ah, yes. Smooth as silk.